Here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
Oh, by the way, welcome to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and I invite you to attend. And also in the studio here, we have Andrew Abey visiting with us again. Oh, he was just stepping out. He's running right back in here, so he can say hello and hello.
Hello again. It's lovely to be back.
There we go. Andrew's is not evident from his name, but he's a professional photographer and he's walking around with his camera tonight. So look out, because he might shoot me, but he may also take a picture of one of you in the audience listening now. It's a very special kind of camera. All right, that's enough daffing. I want to invite you to attend, and here's the deal for tonight. We're going to be visiting Dante, continuing on our journey through the Inferno, and Dante meets the seducers and the panders, that is, pimps and procurers. And we'll see what they're up to and what this version of fraud is all about, because this section of hell is all about fraud. And we'll see where this seduction appears in our world and inside ourselves. And then we'll find some poems, maybe, and music to illustrate this theme in various ways. Also, this is a significant moment. We are now at the start of Canto 18 of the Inferno. That's exactly halfway through the whole poem. That is to say, the whole second half of the Inferno is concerned with the sin of fraud in one way or another. So, you will recall from last time, Dante has been flown down from the upper ledge of violence, down on the back of Geryon to the circle of fraud. And he stands here at the outer edge of the eighth circle. Now, it's a little geography lesson here. The eighth circle of fraud comprises 10 malboge, or bad pouches, or evil ditches. These are circular ditches. They're cut out of iron-colored rock, Dante says, signifying that you choose this sin, this fraud, and now you're iron-bound in it. So picture 10 concentric circular ditches filled with people and some other things we'll find out. And they're suffering in a variety of different ways. Here, to introduce it, are the 10 categories. Number 1, panders and seducers. Flatterers. Simoniacs, there's a technical word. Simoniacs use the church and other holy things to make money from. Sorcerers, including magicians. Barriters, another technical term, meaning people who are corrupting public policies. These are the corrupt officials in government and things. Hypocrites, thieves, deceivers of all kinds, sowers of discord, falsifiers of all kinds. And each circle is smaller than the previous one because, as you recall, hell is a kind of funnel, so each circle gets smaller as we go down and down and down. There are bridges, like radii, crossing over the ditches at intervals. which allow you, I don't know who they're built for, but it's handy that they're there for Dante and Virgil to walk across. They allow you to cross over each ditch, and then as you get on the middle of the bridge, you can peer down deep into the ditch and see what's going on there. And after all, Dante is there to observe what's going on. Well, not every ditch has its bridge, as we'll see, and that's a very important episode later on, later on. Dorothy Sayers says this about the depiction of fraud in these Malbolge. They give us these areas of fraud. They give us the image of the city, that is, the community. They give us the image of the city in corruption, the progressive disintegration of every social relationship, personal and public. Sexuality, ecclesiastical and civil office, language, ownership, counsel, authority, psychic influence and material interdependence, all the media of the community's exchange are perverted and falsified till nothing remains but the descent into the final abyss where faith and trust are wholly and forever extinguished. So, here we are in the first bolgia, or pocket, or ditch. We find here ignudi I peccatori, that is to say, naked sinners. Dante reminds us that they're naked. Of course they are. Everybody is down here. Signifying, of course, that there's no more pretense. We see the fraud clearly here. All right, there are two groups walking in opposite directions around this circle. It's very orderly. They keep to the left. And Dante says it's like the innovative traffic regulations put into effect in Rome in the year 1300. There was this grand jubilee, and there were thousands of pilgrims who came to Rome. And to accommodate all the traffic, they set up this... To us, very, very obvious thing, but in those days it was quite new that people going one way travel to the left and coming the other way go on the right. Or maybe it was the other way around. How do I know? But the whole, it sounds very nice, but for Dante, that whole business of that jubilee was a fraudulent occasion. It was just the Pope wanting to cash in on pilgrims' money. And also a kind of fraudulent self-promotion by Pope Boniface VIII, whom Dante hated, and who was instrumental in getting Dante exiled, by the way. Now, in this area, for the first time, we see the traditional devils or demons. They're cornuti, they're horned, they've got devil's horns. And they're lashing the naked sinners with whips to keep them moving. So there's Dante walking along the outer wall, looking down into the pit. First he sees the panders, the pimps, people who provide sexual encounters for others. Where is the deceit in this? Well, let's see if we can work this out. A pimp sets up the prostitute who allures men or women by their sexy come-on. There's no real attraction going on here, but all a false setup. So the pimp, not even the prostitute, can get the money. The deceit is that the whole sexual episode counterfeits a true relationship. The pimp promotes it for his or her own benefit. Now, Dante notices one of the people in this line of sinners moving around in the circle. He notices a great name, Venedico Caccianamico, Caccianamico, who's walking around, who sees Dante, who then he lowers his head. He doesn't want to be recognized. No deceiver, of course, wants to be recognized. Well, Caccianamico served as a go-between or procurer to get his sister, Ghisolabella, into the bed of the Marquis of Este. He used his sister in order to get in the good books of the Marquis. The fraud was that he pretended to the one or the other or both that he was promoting a love match, or at least a relationship that would benefit them, not as it really was, a relationship to benefit him. Well, he admits his sin to Dante. He sets the record straight or crooked. And then a devil comes up and whips him to move on. Qui non son femmine da conio. Here there are no women for you to con. That's that episode. Now Dante climbs over the bridge to get to the next ditch. And once he's in the middle of the bridge, he can see the people who had been walking in his direction before. And these are the seducers. People who deceived others for their own sexual pleasure. Their primary sin, of course, was treating the other as a sex object, a commodity, not a person. And you cannot have community among commodities, only among people. Now, what this does is breaks down people's trust, and that's why you can have no community. Who can trust people? You say you love them, but then you just use them. Are these people going to trust the next person who says they love them? Fraud destroys our trust in others, and without trust, as I said, there's no community. But Dante sees one person there that he recognizes. I don't know how. I mean, I think Virgil tells him. And it's Jason from Greek myth. You know the story of Jason and the Argonauts. Oh, fine, that's great. But Dante picks his other characteristic. On the way on the journey of the Argonauts to get the Golden Fleece, Jason seduced Hypsipyle, and there were nasty consequences to that. He seduced her and moved on. And then, once he got to his destination, he seduced Medea, whose magic helped him get the Golden Fleece. He married Medea, but then, when they got back to Greece, he abandoned her to go off with the king's daughter, a much better catch, he thought. Now, in the famous tragedy by Euripides, Medea then kills their sons to give Jason the greatest pain she can. So there's Jason, the seducer, who loves him and leaves him. That's it. Dante and Virgil move on. There's not that much. Only half the canto is taken up with these people. Dorothy Sayers reminds us, and I think she's so good I keep bringing her in, Dorothy Sayers reminds us that the panders and seducers... Seducers. I should say it like a Philadelphian. Seducers. Come on. Just slur everything in Philadelphia.
Sounds like something from the Fraggles.
The Fraggles, yes. Okay. Seducers. Excuse me, we've got a radio show to do here. We're talking about Dorothy Sayers. The panderers and seducers represent what we call the sex industry. But allegorically, they represent, she says, the stimulation and exploitation of every kind of passion, e.g. rage or greed, by which one may make tools of other people. I use you, I get you to do what I want by playing on your passions. You see, this is what Donald Trump is admitting more and more that he was doing during his campaign. He's well, what can you say? He says now that he never believed all the rhetoric he'd thrown out. Hillary's the worst person. We're going to get Mexico to build the wall. He was just playing on people's emotions, on their passions, so that they'd give him what he wanted. This is a seducer. We have to picture him constantly going round in a circle while being whipped by this need to be popular, to have acclaim. The self-pitying person is also a good example, playing on other people's sympathy. That's a much more complex psychological deception, and self-deception too, round and round in a circle, whipped along by the psychological need. Now, the pimps are worse, I think. The seducers are at least getting some pleasure out of it, but the pimps get no pleasure, just money or influence. And isn't this what pornography does? Its aim is to whip up our passion so that the people who produce the pornography can make the money. Pornography as pandering. In the interests of our show, I opened up some of the pimpy emails that seem to arrive. Pimpy? What else could I say? That arrive every day in my email box that I always just delete. But this time I opened a few. I won't even tell you the subject headings, which...
Good.
Yeah, well, here's three. Oh, God. Here's what they say. Ready? I think I have to read it like this.
Oh, no, don't.
I'm really going to embarrass him here. So hot and naughty, N-A-W-T-Y. 12 new members have updated selfies and lots of hot pics. Here's another one. Jessica, great name. Jessica has sent you a private invitation to her webcam. Message, hey there. I want you to come and watch C-U-M, of course, and watch me play with myself. I'm bored, horny, and alone. And one more. Alice. This is from Alice, apparently. Alice's status has now changed to single and looking. There is a high chance you know her because she's 3 miles close to you. To read her messages and see her photos, follow here. Well, who would be inflamed by these things? Well, who knows?
Penicillin Penny, she's the queen of the Sunset Strip. Watch out. If she ever gives you any, then you better see your doctor real quick. Get it, buzzer. From the backseat of Cadillac cars to the floor of men's room bars. She's Penicillin Penny, and her future's written in the stars. She'll get it. She's Penicillin Penny, and ever since the day she came. They say she's had so many, she gives them all numbers, not names. Bitch. I always call her hun, but she calls me 1001. And Penicillin Penny starts to boogie when the day is done. Ow. Bring on the clubs. See her passing through. I better run into your house before she stops and lays a little on you. It hurts. If you ever let her in your door, it takes 20 million units or more to cure the love that Penicillin Penny is gonna lay on.
Recognize that? Andrew did. That's Dr. Hook, Penicillin Penny. Venereal disease as the symbol of what Dante's talking about. The ugly, destructive reality of the false, pseudo-attractive exterior. So here to repeat is this state of the soul. We use others by playing on their passions. Caught, though, in a circle, just going round and round, getting nowhere, and whipped along the way by the need to keep on rousing passion, others' passion, our own passion. But before we leave this section of Dante, let's talk about the eponymous Pander. Panderus, a character found in Chaucer's long poem, Troilus in Cressida. He's the guy who brings together Troilus and Cressida, these two lovers from two different sides. He brings them together. But then Shakespeare took the story and turned it into his play, Troilus and Cressida. It's a much more cynical version of the story. Panderus is a lecher. He brings them together, it sometimes feels, for his own voyeuristic ends. And at the end of the poem, at the end of the play, in the final scene ends with a kind of wild battle scene. Hector, the great Trojan, has just been killed. All the warriors let loose in a bloody rage. Hope of revenge shall hide our inward woe, they say. Then Pandarus comes out onto the stage to be banished by Troilus, who says, "Hence, broker lackey," and he hits him, "ignominy and shame pursue thy like, and live I with thy name." That is, let the name Pander become a shameful label for all future procurers. And then the stage is emptied, except for Pandarus. It's time for the epilogue, in which, traditionally, one of the actors then comes out and speaks directly to the audience. Pandarus is full of self-pity. He says, "Why should our endeavor be so desired and the performance so loathed?" That is to say, everyone wants the sexual thrill, but they condemn us who provide it for them. In one Royal Shakespeare Company version years ago, Pandarus, who has throughout the play been strutting around the stage in a lovely white linen suit, here at the end crawls out across the stage, just in undershirt and filthy white trousers, his face full of open sores. The language reveals that he is ravaged by venereal disease, and raising himself a little on his elbows, He gives his final lines, telling us he'll die soon from his afflictions. But till then, he says, till then I'll sweat and seek about for eases, and at that time bequeath you my diseases. End of play. The audience was hushed for about 30 seconds, which is a long time. Now, usually the epilogue asks for our applause, but here he gives us something. He gives us VD. It's by far Shakespeare's most cynical and bitter play. It was not performed, we understand, until the early 20th century, inaugurating that century of bitter cynicism. It's a different version of hell from Dante's, but equally hellish. Now let's move on to some other treatments of seducers and panders. I could have talked a lot about poetry. There's a lot of poems about seduction, especially, say, in the 17th and 18th centuries when witty men could treat women as just objects for their own pleasure. They sometimes crossed the line from seduction to abduction and rape, but seduction is not rape. It involves getting the other person to consent and then leaving. If the person doesn't consent, it's not seduction, it's a failed seduction. The poets like John Donne made names for themselves by witty seduction poems, and perhaps the most famous 17th century seduction poem is Andrew Marvell's To His Coy Mistress, which I'm prepared to go on about and tell you about, but I think we've got too many songs to cover, so I'm going to skip Andrew Marvell's To His Coy Mistress. I hear you all groaning out there. You all wanted to hear about that. Well, too bad. Another time. Let's move over to some music. I thought it would be easy to find lots of songs about seduction, but there aren't that many. There's lots of songs about the pains of being seduced. But here is probably the greatest seduction song the most notorious seducer in Western literature is Don Juan, or Don Giovanni, as in Mozart's opera Don Giovanni. Here we watch Don Giovanni as he intrudes on the wedding of Masetto and Celina. He gets Masetto off the scene. They're just peasants. They're okay. We can do whatever we want with them. He gets Masetto off the scene and works on Celina, whom he's invited to his castle. "Là ci darem la mano," he says. "There we'll give each other our hands," in a kind of perversion of a marriage. "Vorrei e non vorrei," she says. "I would like to, but I wouldn't like to." But by the end of the duet, they're both saying, "Andiam, let's go." He's seduced her by his charms, by the force of his advances, by his high rank. They're interrupted, though, you'll be glad to hear. But the seduction would have worked. Here's a little bit of this. Let's see what we can do. Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, with Evening Under Lamplight with Robert Louis Abrahamson and special guest Andrew A.B., and we're looking at Dante's seducers. And as the man says,
"When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105, community radio in your city."
Now, you know that we have a special obligation this week to celebrate one of our most frequent guests on the show, Ray Davies. Now, Sir Ray Davies, after the New Year's honours list. Does Ray, Sir Ray, have songs about seduction? Yes, and here are three of them. First, a natural follow-up to Don Giovanni is Dandy. He's a seducer, this Dandy, but Ray's attitude to him is a little complex. With an apparently light-hearted music hall tune, he seems to censure Dandy, who's growing a little old for this kind of thing. What's he going to do now? Dandy, where are you going to go now? Who are you going to run to? And yet he seems to admire the panache of the Dandy. All your little life, you're chasing all the girls. Sounds like fun, I suppose. They can't resist your smile. Oh, they long for Dandy. Chatting up the ladies, tickling their fancy, pouring out your charm to meet your own demands and turn it off at will, knocking on the back door, climbing through the window, hubby's gone away, and while the cat's away, the mice are gonna play, oh, you low-down Dandy. And now the reminder that this kind of life is hollow. Dandy, you know you're moving much too fast. And Dandy, you know you can't escape the past. Look around you and see the people settle down. And when you're old and gray, you will remember what they said, that two girls are too many and three's a crowd and four, you're dead. So Dandy, when are you going to give up? Are you feeling old now? And then the final shift. Dandy has no ties. He's free to live as he chooses. No one's going to tell him what to do. You always will be free. You need no sympathy. A bachelor you will stay, and Dandy, you're all right.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Dandy, where you gonna go now? Who you gonna run to? Are you a little lie? You're chasing all the girls. They can't resist your smile. Oh, they long for Dandy, Dandy. Chatting up the ladies, tickling the fancy, pouring out your charm to meet your own demands and turn it off at will. Oh, they long. On the back door, climbing through the window, hubby's gone away, and while the cat's away, the mice are gonna play. Oh, you low down Dandy, you know you're moving much too fast, and Dandy, you know you can't escape the past. Look round and see the people settle down. And when you're old and grey, you will remember what they said. That two girls are too many, three's a crowd, and four you're dead. Oh, Dandy, Dandy, when you're gonna give up? Are you feeling old now? You always will be free. You need no sympathy. A bachelor you will stay. And Dandy, you're alright. You're alright. You're alright. You're alright. You're alright. You're alright.
Yes. Dandy needs no sympathy. He's free and can do what he wants. But no relationships. Which kind of life do you choose? Tied into sharing a life with someone else or living unattached and free? Dante might say that the second choice is really the choice of being whipped around in endless circles. But Sir Ray Davies, here in his early 20s, writing a probably about his wild brother Dave, isn't ready to see this. Okay, ready for the next one. Here's a man-on-man seduction. It's called Just Friends, written for the film Percy. I think that was 1971. It sounds like a genuine offer of friendship, even if friend had a coded meaning in the late 60s and early 70s. He says, please step inside just for a while. I want to befriend you and just make you smile. What could be more genuine than that? You've nothing to lose. I've nothing to gain. I shall not molest you. I shan't rape your brain. Friends will become. Friends we will stay. Friends till forever or just today. Please don't deceive. Please don't pretend. Just be my companion and friend till the end. Now, that's all very well, but listen to the music. It begins like a kind of fairy tale magic with his deep, comforting voice, harpsichord and strings. It's not a rock song at all. And then it shifts into Ray Davies' crooner voice and, as Juliet says, vampire music. There's something very unsettling about the strings, something sort of deceitful. And the harpsichord now sounds like something from the Addams Family.
Please step inside just for a while. I want to befriend you and just make you smile. You've nothing to lose. I've nothing to gain. I shall not molest you. I shan't rape your brain.
Friends we'll become, friends we will stay, friends till forever, not just today. Please don't deceive, please don't pretend, just be my companion and friend through the end.
On to our third King's Seduction song. In this song, the Schlemiel persona is the one apparently being seduced. She has lured him back to her flat in this sort of upmarket Barclay Mews in London, which was right around the corner from the Pye record studios where the Kinks were recording in those days. But it's not the kind of evening her appearance had promised. The leaves of brown came falling down when he first met her in the Barclay Mews, but her flat is no turn-on. In the morning he finds the dining room chilly, the kitchen sink is cluttered up. He makes a cup of tea and then tries to sneak out early in the morning. I thought you had much better things to do. It was apparently a disastrous night. I thought you were an intellect, but now that I recollect, you left me reeling. You made me drink a toast, but when I finished, I was looking at the ceiling. And yet, he's wept floods of tears thinking of her later. She left him broken-hearted in Barclay Mews. And watch the way the sordid elegance of the honky-tonk piano played by Nicky Hopkins contends with the overpowering beat of Pete Quaife on bass.
Mm-hmm.
was just Barclay Muse by the Kinks. The next song takes us to the Rolling Stones, another seduction song called The Spider and the Fly. We might have played this song last time when we talked about Arachne, the spider woman. It's a recognizable scene. He's on tour at a loose end at night, wondering what I'll do when I'm through tonight. Smoking, moping, maybe just hoping some little girl will pass on by. But he has some loyalty. Don't want to be alone, but I love my girl at home. I remember what she said. My, 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 don't tell lies. Keep fidelity in your head. When you're done your show, go to bed. Don't say hi like a spider to a fly. Jump right ahead and you're dead. But he goes down to the bar at the place I'm at, and you see, like one of Dante's seducers, he's constantly being whipped to get it on. So he's sitting, drinking, superficially thinking. Thinking about what? About that rinsed-out blonde on my left. And then, before he can stop himself, he's saying hi, like a spider to a fly, even though he remembers his little girl's warning. I mean, it's not even as though she's really hot stuff. The seducer's being whipped to hit on to anyone he can. Besides being a rinsed-out blonde, she was common, flirty. She looked about 30. I would have run away, but I was on my own, as though that's an excuse. He's defrauding himself now, too. What does this woman do with herself? She told me later she was a machine operator. She liked the way I held the microphone. Uh-huh. I suddenly wonder who's actually seducing whom. I like the way you hold your microphone. A great come-on line. How can he resist? Jump right ahead in my web, he says. And there's a nice seductive country blues music to go with it. Well, that was the Rolling Stones, Spider and the Fly. Andrew's heard it, I think, for the first time tonight. That's great.
Yeah.
We're always glad to introduce you to new songs. So, was he out to seduce her? But did she seduce him in the end? Well, there are several other songs about the seducer being seduced, and we're going to move, if we have the time, into three Motown songs about this subject. Here's Smokey Robinson about the hunter gets captured by the game. It's the Marvelettes singing, but it's Smokey's elegant metaphors and rhymes. There's a beautiful opening. It's peaceful, hopeful, about new beginnings. Every day brings change, and the world puts on a new face. Certain things rearrange, and this whole world seems like a new place. And then we shift to the occasion of the song. This lovely world changes into one of predators. Secretly, I've been trailing you, like a fox that preys on a rabbit. Had to get you, and so I knew I had to learn your ways and habits. You were the catch that I was after. But then certain things rearrange. I looked up and I was in your arms and I knew I had been captured. What's this whole world coming to? Things just ain't the same. Anytime the hunter gets captured by the game. Now remember, seducers treat other people as objects, commodities, not as people. So instead of two people loving each other, it's right that we should see them as hunter and game. The one out to get the other, or as it turns out, vice versa. So here's the Marvelettes, backed by the wonderful Funk Brothers, and Hunter gets captured by the game. Okay, that was the Marvelettes. The hunter gets captured by the game. And let's move on from the Marvelettes, but stay with Smokey Robinson. Now, there's no reversal of seducer and seduced in this next song. Just a straightforward seduction, or the pain that comes from being seduced, being deceived. The love I saw in you was not real. It was just a mirage. And that's fraud for you. Nothing real, just a mirage. It's the usual smoky, elegant lyrics, which I just delight in going through with you, please. There you were, beautiful. The promise of love was written on your face. You led me on with untrue kisses. Oh, you held me captive in your false embrace. Quicker than I could bat an eye, seems you were telling me goodbye. Oh, just a minute ago, your love was here. All of a sudden, it seemed to disappear. And then he comes up to the refrain, and he needs a rhyme for mirage. Sweetness was only heartache's camouflage. The love I saw in you was just a mirage. We used to meet in romantic places. Oh, you gave the illusion that your love was real. Now all that's left are lipstick traces from the kisses you only pretended to feel. I'm not sure why I really like that. I think that's a wonderfully elegant. Lipstick traces from the kisses you only pretended to feel. And now are meetings you avoid. Now, when you end the line with a verb, you build up the expectation there's going to be a nice rhyme with avoid, right? What's he going to rhyme with avoid? And now our meetings you avoid, and so my world you have...
Destroyed.
Oh, just a minute ago your love was here. Oh, baby, all of a sudden it seemed to disappear. Get ready for the next rhyme for mirage. Yeah, the way you wrecked my life was like sabotage. The love I saw in you was just a mirage. But what about the image of a mirage? Well, he hasn't forgotten that. Yeah, you only filled me with despair by showing love that wasn't there. Just like the desert shows a thirsty man, a green oasis where there's only sand. You lured me into something I should have dodged. The love I saw in you was just a mirage.
Captive in no false embrace. Quick
Well, that was the Miracles. The love I saw in you was just a mirage. I call that part of the silver age of Motown, not the golden age. And if you don't know the difference between silver age poetry and golden age poetry, we'll have to teach you this another time, but not tonight, because it's time to say goodnight from us here at Cambridge 105 in the lovely Gwydir Street Studios. This has been Evening Under Lamplight, and we thank you for attending. You've been invited to attend, and you have attended, even if only for these past 2 seconds, so that you're hearing this now. And thank you to Andrew Abey, who's been sitting here. He's got actually several other ideas for seduction songs. And I was going to play from Bat Out of Hell, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which is one of the great seduction pseudo-operatic pieces. But there's no time for that tonight, so maybe next time we'll continue with seduction themes and carry on with some of these things. And so now it's time to say goodnight from us here. And we're going to be interrupted, or if we're not ready, by the loud and raucous station identification in 20 seconds or so. And then comes the news, and you'll be awfully glad to hear the news. It's always so very informative. And then the weather, which is much more grounded and down to earth, and we all need to know the weather because it's all around us. 1, 2, 3.
On FM, online, and DAB Digital Radio.
This is Cambridge 105.